yesterday, as you walked around, there were a lot of people wearing t-shirts with their allegiance emblazoned across the front. Some of them are here this morning. I'm not interested in who you voted for. But what it got me thinking about was the t-shirts that I used to wear as a teenager. Back in high school, you wore your allegiance on your t-shirt. It was cool to wear brand name t-shirts. You were essentially free advertising for the companies that you wore. But you could also tell what group people wanted to be associated with. Just by the name or just by the logo on their chest, you could see what group they wanted to be a part of. So in early high school, I was all about the surfing brands, Quicksilver, Rip Curl, Billabong. But then I moved to the skateboarding brands, Vans, Element, Etnies. I wasn't a surfer. Never once was I a surfer, not even interested in surfing, but I wore the brands. I was never a skateboarder. The closest I got was playing Tony Hawk's Pro Skater, the video game, but even then, that's not particularly close. So why wear the clothes? Well, it was about fitting in. It was about fitting in with my friends and with the culture around me. The brand said which group I wanted to be associated with. Even if I wasn't really participating, I could be associated with them. Who you wanted to be identified with. And now perhaps you're wondering, well, what does he wear now? Well, if you see me during the week, if you haven't noticed, I just wear plain t-shirts. Muted colors all day, every day. I don't think I own a single one with a brand printed on the chest. In fact, I pretty much just buy the same shirt over and over again. I've got three shades of kind of earthy, natural greens, two shades of blue, one black, one gray, and one kind of beige. It's all the same t-shirt, though. And there's another t-shirt I have that I have three of the same style, exactly the same style. Three versions of black, they are. All different. Trust me, they're different. But three different versions of black. And maybe I'm rebelling against what I was as a teenager, against that brand-driven culture. Or maybe I found my home in a new group. The I don't want to be identified clearly as in a group. Because that's a group too. I wonder where does your allegiance lie? Who do you want to be associated with? Who are you ashamed of? Is there a group that you want to be part of and a group perhaps that you don't want to be part of? A set of values that you're holding to? Is there a goal that you're chasing? We read just before in Mark 8 that Jesus called in the crowd to join his disciples as he said, whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. And to the crowd, he said, do you want to follow me? And to his disciples, he said, do you think that you're following me? There's a message for each one of us this morning. Do you know where your allegiance lies? Do you know what it's going to cost you to follow through? The kicker of this passage really comes in verse 38. It says, if anyone is ashamed of me and my words in this adulterous and sinful generation, the Son of Man will be ashamed of them when he comes in his Father's glory with the holy angels. Jesus says to the crowd, and he says to his disciples, if you're ashamed of me, if you're not with me, if you don't want to be identified with me, well, then I will be ashamed of you. You won't be with me. You won't be identified with me. The question, the challenge is, who do you want to be with? Whose approval are you going to chase? Is it Jesus or is it the world? And what is that, the world, when we say it like that? People might think that the moral standards have fallen off a cliff recently and that things just aren't like what they used to be in the good old days. You think our world, our culture right now is bad? Well, Jesus calls his an adulterous and sinful generation. Is that the world that we're chasing after? It might look like bright lights and cheap thrills and instant gratification. But it's all a facade. And one day it will all be exposed. I love watching the behind-the-scenes shows about a TV show or a movie. And it's amazing the techniques that they use to create an illusion. And not just the sets and the costumes and the props, not just the camera angles and the film techniques. No, there's green screens everywhere, computer-generated images all over the place, and it's all fake. Compelling, but fake. And I think we see that playing out day to day, some of those layers being stripped back. We see the social media highlights of someone's life versus the reality of what they're living. We see the picture-perfect advertising that we're surrounded by that we just know is not real. We hear the utopian promises of our political leaders, and I don't know whether we trust them to come through with the goods. We know that everything is edited, everything's staged, and ultimately it's empty. And we see it playing out around us and in our own lives as people chase the acceptance of the world in the clothes that we wear, the purchases we make, the choices we make. And people chase success or sex or security or something else, and none of that satisfies. So are you eager to be accepted, to be associated with Jesus? Or to be accepted and associated with the world? Because our decision there has everyday and eternal implications. When the Son of Man comes in his Father's glory with the holy angels, when the Son of Man comes in judgment, in glory, well, our fate is on the line. I think we probably know that. We've probably heard that before. And still, we know that, and still we chase the acceptance of the world. Not from Jesus. And maybe not wholeheartedly, but we place a bet both ways. We're not wholly ashamed of Jesus, but we try and associate with him and with the world. We divide our attention. We split our allegiance. The thing is, you can't split your life. You can't split your soul. It's not a pie chart that you can divide up evenly. It's not a preferential voting system where Jesus is just one of the votes amongst many. And that idea that you can't divide up your life or your soul, you can't give away some of it, well, that's the focus of verses 35 to 37. It's all or nothing. Now, those verses, they center on this Greek word, psuche. It's the inner being. It's that vital breath, our soul, we might say, or our life. And working backwards from verse 38, it's there in every line. What can anyone give in exchange for their soul, for their life? But what good is it for someone to gain the whole world yet forfeit their soul, their life? For whoever wants to save their soul, their life, well, they will lose it. But whoever loses their soul, their life, for me and for the gospel will save it. What can anyone give in exchange for their soul? Whether in death or when the Son of Man comes in glory, you can't buy back your life if you've already sold it to someone else. Either it's with Jesus or it's not. And you've got nothing to give in exchange for your soul if you've already given it away to something else. Either it's with Jesus or it's not. Jesus says, what good is it for someone to gain the whole world yet forfeit their soul, forfeit their life? And if you spent your whole life gaining the world, well, it's worth nothing, Jesus says in death. Worth nothing in judgment. What good is there? What profit to show? You gain the whole world. You gain acceptance and honor. You gain riches and possessions. You gain power and status here and now. And ultimately, eternally, it amounts to nothing. No amount of worldly approval, no amount of selfish glory, no amount of comfort, no amount of security. It's all worth zero. A couple of weeks ago, the price of a popular cryptocurrency crashed. And you're thinking, I don't know what cryptocurrency is, and I don't really understand it either. But this is all you need to know. You just need to think of this as digital money. You can imagine a real coin if you want, if that helps. But in early April, one Luna coin, you're holding your one Luna coin, and it was worth over $100, that coin that you held. And on the 4th of May, while still each one of those coins was worth $86, sounding good. A week later, and it was worth less than a dollar. And now, right now, you're holding your one coin, and it's worth, they say, 0.0001 of a dollar. Just a few weeks ago, you were holding $100, and now you're holding 0.0001. You could have all the Luna in the world, and you'd still pretty much have nothing. You gain it all, and there's still no profit. But what good is it to have the whole world if your soul, if your life is worth nothing? For whoever wants to save their soul, whoever wants to save their life, Jesus says, will lose it. But whoever loses their soul, their life, for me and for the gospel, will save it. Do you think you can save up something through all of your working, all your striving? Do you think that feeling of acceptance of being part of something on this earth, something worldly, do you think that can save you? Can glory or comfort or security? If we try and earn those things, if we cling to them, if we hold on to those, we'll lose it all. If that's all we've got, then all we've got is nothing at all. And so the question is, are you willing to give it all up? Because Jesus says whoever loses their life, whoever loses their soul, well, they're the ones who will save it. How? How will they do it? Well, if you want to truly live, if you want to save your soul, if you want to be my disciple, Jesus says, well, deny yourself. Take up your cross and follow me. Deny yourself and take up your cross and follow me. It's three imperatives, three commands. Deny, take up, and follow. And I think each one of those images is somewhat jarring for us. Deny ourselves, but the whole ethos of our culture is to live for ourselves, to give to ourselves. How do we deny ourselves? Well, take up your cross, but that's a symbol of suffering and shame and death. Well, who would choose that? Take up your cross. And then it says to follow Jesus. But we want to make our own plans. We want to go our own way. Each point, it cuts at the heart of the world that we live in. Deny yourself, take up your cross, and follow him. Each point, it cuts at that world we live in and that culture that we're surrounded by. In the last 2,000 years, society has moved from somewhat God-centered, God-oriented, to a worldview like that, to a human-centered, a humanist worldview, and now to an individualistic, self-centered worldview. That's the lens of our, of our culture to seek individual pleasure, self-fulfillment, personal gain. We're told to find ourselves. Go on a Kentucky tour and find yourself, or travel around Australia to find yourself. We're told to find ourselves, not to lose ourselves. And why? This is why it's self-denial. It's so unnatural to us, so difficult for us to even see. There's an experiment where people are given a special set of glasses. They're called, I need to read this, stereopticons. That sounds cool. I want a pair. And what it does is it allows you to see two separate images at the same time. Each eye simultaneously sees a different picture. And not switching from one another, not focusing on one and then focusing on another, no, both at the same time. It's kind of cool. And in the experiment that they did, the subjects were, they described seeing only one of the two pictures, even though they know that technology works. They can see both. But when asked, well, what did you see? The subject said, well, could only see one picture. And that one picture that they could see was the one that was familiar to them. Essentially, they'd been conditioned to see only one of them. Here's an example. When a picture of a baseball player was flashed to one eye and a bullfighter flashed to the other eye at the same time, baseball player and bullfighter, were the Mexicans, they reported seeing a bullfighter. The North Americans, they saw the baseball player. They only saw what they were used to seeing, what they were conditioned to see. And then they went a little bit deeper. They were shown an unusual playing card, a red six of spades. A red six of spades. And an image that makes no sense if you just see it. But even in that scenario, most people will experience some vague physical discomfort, but then they will identify it as a normal six of spades. Nothing wrong with it. Just a normal six of spades. There's some discomfort, but then they see what they've been trained to see, what they thought they were seeing. Not what is really there, but what they thought they were seeing. We're trained to see self as good and denial as bad. They show us an image of self-denial and self-seeking. Self-denial, self-seeking. We'll choose self-seeking every day of the week. We'll choose that as the good life. So how do we break out of that? How do we see something that we've been trained not to see? Well, firstly, denial of self is not the same as self-denial. I know that sounds like just some wordplay, but denial of self, not the same as self-denial. We're not giving up things. We're not giving up on some activities. Jesus isn't talking about fasting. He's not talking about self-control. He's not suggesting that you say no to ice cream or no to the latest iPhone. No, it's bigger, it's deeper, it's a more profound shift than that. It's the opposite of self-affirmation or of putting value on yourself. It's not claiming any of the rights or any of the privileges, even the ones that you reasonably deserve. Not claiming any of that. Denial of the self is to lay all of that down. It's not about you. Deny yourselves. There's more to say about that, but for the moment, we need to look at the second command. So that's going to help us understand. The second command says, take up your cross. And if denying ourselves flips our worldview, then what about carrying a cross? Imagine what the crowd and the disciples thought when Jesus said that. Hearing those words on that first day, a cross? Really? Because all they knew of the cross was Roman execution. They wouldn't want to have one up on the platform. No, all they knew of the cross was Roman execution. It meant official abandonment by the powers that be. They were against you. It meant a long walk of shame and humiliation. You were disgraced. It meant excruciating pain and suffering. You were tortured in agony. And it ended in death. The cross always ended in death. It always had. So how could it mean anything else than that to them as they heard those words? Take up your cross. How could you willingly take up your cross? In the very verses that precede that one, Jesus asks them, ask the disciples in verse 29, who do you say I am? And Peter jumps in and he answers, you are the Messiah. Jesus warned them not to tell anyone about him. He then began to teach them that the Son of Man must suffer many things and be rejected by the elders, the chief priests, and the teachers of the law, and that he must be killed. And after 3 days, rise again. He spoke plainly about this, and Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him. But when Jesus turned and looked at his disciples, he rebuked Peter. Get behind me, Satan, he said. You do not have in mind the concerns of God, but merely human concerns. But Peter identifies Jesus as the Messiah, the anointed one, the Savior. And then immediately Jesus says that he's going to be rejected and suffer and die. And presumably they completely missed a little bit about rising again at this point. And so at that point, the disciples experienced an intense dissonance between what they believed, what they'd been trained to see, and that truth that Jesus was speaking. A dissonance between what they thought they knew and what Jesus was now telling them. It's that experiment with the two images all over again. Will we see what we're conditioned to see, triumphant Messiah or suffering Messiah? And they're like, well, triumphant Messiah must be the right answer. But as I said, that experiment going deeper, not just choosing between two images, but then what do you do when you're shown an image that doesn't actually make any sense? The red six of spades. As I said, most people then, they don't see that. They just see a normal six of spades. We see what we're trained to see, not what is there. And I think the same thing happens to Peter. The word Christ and Jesus' words about suffering and death, they flash up on the screen. Christ and suffering and death together, one image. And Peter feels more than a vague sense of discomfort at this point. He feels profound horror. This cannot be. A suffering Messiah will know that can't be. Jesus must be wrong. The Messiah can't die. No, he must be a triumphant Messiah because that's what we know. They were thinking, a suffering Messiah? The Messiah can't die? And then a few verses later, they're thinking, take up your cross? No, we can't die. The Messiah can't die. We can't die. Because take up your cross, well, that equals death. We've probably softened it a bit in our own minds. And somehow we've actually even flipped it. We say things like, oh no, the work conference, it's on the Gold Coast. We all have our cross to bear. Oh, it looks like I'll have to take the last croissant. We all have our cross to bear. But even when we haven't used it humorously like that, we don't have a first century view of the cross. We assume that Jesus must have been speaking metaphorically. It just means that it's our burden to carry. That sickness or suffering, that's our cross. That loneliness or rejection we're feeling, well, that's That's our cross to bear as we follow him. That weight of responsibility that we carry in our role, well, that's just our cross to bear. You could look back at the last few years of my life and see me carrying all these crosses. We moved down here from Sydney and we left our friends behind, but that's just our cross to bear for listening to God's call. We've been separated from family even more so these last 2 years, but that's just our cross to carry as we follow Jesus. Now, I've experienced my own fair share of stress and criticism and difficult decisions to make in this time here at church in this role, but that's just my cross. I don't say any of that for your sympathy because it's not about me. And I mention those things because I don't think any of those things are taking up my cross. You're taking up a cross is a call to die. Quote Bonhoeffer, the cross is laid on every Christian. When Christ calls a person, he bids them come and die. When Christ calls a person, he bids them come and die. Carrying a cross is laying down your life. Wholly, completely. When Jesus says to deny yourself and take up your cross, he doesn't use the usual word for deny. No, he picks the stronger option. Up in Nehemiah, for those who are looking at their Greek, he picks the stronger verb. And it means to have absolutely no association with or disown completely, without reservations or hesitation. Deny yourself. Disown yourself completely. And the sad irony is that very verb about denial, it's the one that Jesus used to prophesy Peter's denial of him. That Jesus would be disowned completely by Peter. And Peter couldn't let go of himself. He wasn't ready to deny himself. He wasn't ready to take up his cross. Wasn't ready to follow Jesus completely. To let go of himself and instead take hold of Jesus. To be aware of Christ and no longer aware of self. To see Jesus only, to follow him closely. To lose your life, to lose your soul in order to gain it all. Jesus says, whoever loses their life, their soul, for me and for the gospel, will save it. And there's no real distinction between Jesus and the gospel here. It's not two things we're trying to think about. One thing in two ways. It's the same in verse 38. Jesus says, be ashamed of me and my words. The person of Jesus, the words of Jesus, the good news of Jesus, they're all bound up together. So it's not simply losing your life for no reason. Not just giving it all away for no reason. No, it's a life lost in order to gain Christ. Carry your cross, Jesus says. Follow me. Give it all away and follow me. It's about relationship. It's not a giving up. It's about going with him. Being with him. And it's about commitment. Pledge your allegiance. Choose to be identified with him. Sharing with him. Connected to him. In Hebrews 12 we read, therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles. And let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us, affixing our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of faith. For the joy set before him, he endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider him who endured such opposition from sinners, so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. It says, deny yourselves and take up your cross, but you're not losing. No, ultimately you're gaining. Consider him. Walk with him. Set your eyes on him. Deny yourself. Take up your cross and follow him. Be with him. And once again from Bonhoeffer, says, all that self-denial can say is, he leads the way. Keep close to him. He leads the way. Keep close to him. So let's take up our crosses. Let's deny ourselves and let's follow him. Let's pray together. Father, it's a challenging word this morning. The call to lay down ourselves, lay down things that we hold dear. The call to choose a different way to our culture and our world. Lord, you help us to see that as we deny ourselves, as we take up our cross, as we follow you, we're not losing it all. We're actually gaining the only thing that matters. And so God, now it's an opportunity for us to surrender. As we sing these songs, as we pray this prayer, as we go out into the week to come, Lord, help us to lay ourselves down and hold on to you. And praise in Jesus' name.